Last week, the National Party released its Teaching the Basics Brilliantly education policy for primary and intermediate schools. It would require an hour of reading, writing and maths each day, twice yearly testing for students from year three, and a rewrite of the curriculum to clearly state what must be taught in each of these areas each year. The same week, the government released a document, 4 years in the making, redefining the curriculum, termed a common practice model. Both parties are aiming to reverse declining student achievement in reading, writing and maths when compared to international standards. On 9 to Noon last week, we spoke with literacy expert James Chapman, a Professor Emeritus of Educational Psychology at Massey University, about the changes to the teaching of literacy. Today we look at the proposed changes to the teaching of primary school maths. Dr. Lisa Darra is a lecturer in mathematics education at the University of Auckland.
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm kind of familiar with some of the progress that's been made at the moment under the, you know, under the Labour government, the moving forward with the curriculum and the common practice model. And I've been interested in hearing what National has to say with some of the policies. And it's sometimes a little bit difficult to divorce my own political opinions from it, but I'll see how I go. So looking at, first of all, maybe the common practice model, when this first was announced, I mean, my colleagues and I were kind of both alarmed and thought it was promising at the same time. I think any time that you say something about a common practice model, it sort of raises the question, well, whose practice? Who's going to get to choose what the practices are that we're all supposed to be aligning with? And now that we've had the first phase of it published, I'm no longer so alarmed. I think it's been designed by a really highly informed quality group of researchers. It is based on evidence, and yet it, at the same time, it's a little bit vague at the moment. So it's off to a good start. It's promising. It encourages kind of it's not too prescriptive and encourages a diverse approach, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the next phase.
We had the same conversation talking about literacy. This is still quite high level, right? That where it actually gets applied in the classroom, those details still to come later in the year, yeah?
Absolutely. And I think the teachers will be really wanting to see what are these more sort of descriptive elements of what it should look like in the classroom. And not only a description of what it should look like, but what sort of supports are going to be provided alongside that. You know, it's all very well and good to say this is how it should be done, but what sort of professional development is going to be provided alongside it?
What's changed when it comes to maths, even at that quite high level, and there's four different themes, and, you know, it's a very big bureaucratic document at this stage. But what has changed, if you come right down to the nub of it, which is the way that maths is taught in our primary schools? Where are you seeing a shift in the new practice model?
Well, What I'm hoping to see quite explicit as a shift is a move away from ability grouping. So we had, I mean, the last kind of big professional development that happened in mathematics was quite a long time ago now, and it was the Numeracy Development Project. And there was some really good aspects to that. But a downside of the project was that it kind of encourage teachers to put children into fixed ability groups based on this kind of assessment of what stage they were at. And it ended up putting a lot of ceilings on progress for children. They often stayed in their group and they didn't sort of move further on very easily. And it's well known to marginalize the already marginalized learners further. They're often disproportionately placed in the lower groups due to kind of teacher bias and systemic racism, for example. And so I'm hoping that the common practice model will really explicitly say, look, ability grouping isn't appropriate, but here are some ways that you can still cater for the diversity in your classroom without having to resort to that practice.
What are the issues that we're having with the maths abilities of our students? And we've seen, certainly looking at the literacy side of things, we have seen that the measures that indicate we are slipping. And if you don't necessarily want to hang your hat on international tests or other measures, talking to high school teachers and what they are finding when kids make that transition tells the same story. From your perspective, what is happening to the mathematical abilities and capabilities of primary students?
Well, I mean, it really looks like something negative is happening when you kind of look at international testing. But we do have some quite robust testing in New Zealand with the NMSSA data. That's actually a really good measure of what's going on. And with, every 5 years, it does an in-depth look at every subject area, goes into schools every year. And it actually shows that we aren't slipping that much. I mean, we're slipping in the ranks, but it's kind of more, the status quo in our country. So I think it's important to balance, balance this idea that it's a dire situation where we're just getting worse and worse with kind of the reality we're not getting better. And the fact that we're not getting better is certainly something that we need to address and look at. So some of the possible reasons for not making progress, some of them are macro, some of them are caused by rising inequities in our society, and that causes really complex things to play out in the classroom and makes it difficult to do the job of teaching. And then some things are related to mathematics and probably too much focus on number and not enough focus on sort of the broader curriculum. The ability grouping, as I've said, those practices do work to lower achievement across the board and place ceilings on children's progress in mathematics. And so those are some of the possible causes.
What are the concerns you have with the teaching of numeracy?
I mean, it's not so much that I have concerns with the teaching of numeracy, more that you need kind of a balanced approach in your mathematics classroom. You need children to be learning skills, but you also need them to be applying their knowledge of number and and those mathematical skills that they acquire to real problems, problems that are kind of meaningful to them and meaningful to the communities they come from, and sort of give them a sense that mathematics is a useful subject to be learning for their lives currently and their lives in the future. And then at the same time, you need to balance that with parts of your program where they can practice that numeracy. So that, they've learned a skill and then they can actually have some kind of practice. Often you have a push from a political push for this back to the basics. We need to teach our children times tables. And yes, children do need to learn their times tables, but that it's only one small component of mathematics. And you can certainly be good at times tables and not good at maths. And you can certainly progress in your mathematical skills and problem solving understanding without being the fastest person at times tables. So it's a balanced approach that we need to have in our classrooms.
What is known about, what is proven about good pedagogy in the teaching of maths in primary schools?
Well, I mean, all the research around the world talks about, often it's called reform teaching, but it talks about the importance of having challenging tasks for children, promoting a sense of productive struggle, making sure that these tasks are worthwhile and they're gritty and children can get really stuck into them. The ideal sorts of tasks that you have in a classroom have what we call a low floor and a high ceiling. So we want the access into the problem solving of them to be easy enough that everyone can make a start to the problem solving, and also have a lot of scope for movement. And so you can take that problem up to really high and sophisticated levels and really develop excellent mathematics generalizations, for example. So that, I mean, that's what the research says in general. But also the research often finds that it's hard for teachers to provide this sort of maths learning, and it takes quite a lot of teacher knowledge and teacher understanding of mathematics. So on the one hand, this is like the gold standard of teaching, but it's also it does present challenge for teachers, and they do need support.
Which is where we come to where teachers leave or graduate, leave their training, and we'll start to talk about some of National's policy proposals at the moment, because we have heard also from the teachers of teachers, right, that their confidence in maths and science in particular is not where it ought to be. And then that flows through. If you don't feel good about your own abilities with a subject, it impacts on what you convey to students, and impacts on how much you incorporate that subject into your teaching. Do we have an issue there?
I mean, yes, I would say that teacher confidence is always going to be something that's really important. When you think about a young person who's choosing a career for themselves, someone who's has a lot of expertise in mathematics have a lot of options. You know, there are many career choices that they can go into, and some of them do go into teaching, but they have other options as well. And so we do have pre-service teachers, we do have a proportion of them who need to build up their confidence in the mathematics themselves and do need support there.
Let's look then at National's policy that was released last week. And again, it's pretty high level at this stage. There are some principles in it, requiring an hour of maths, 2 hours of reading and writing on average each day in primary and intermediate schools. Let's stay with maths. As discussed with reading last week, is it the case that many teachers will be doing this in their classroom practice already? It's not a solid block of 1 hour. It will mean that mathematical principles are, wended into other things, whether it's art or music or PE or whatever.
There will be definitely a lot of teachers who are doing an hour per day of maths, but I would say that there are also a lot of teachers who are not. And it is something that we at my colleagues and I do hear from our pre-service teachers when they go out on practicum. They do sometimes come back and report to us that they didn't see much maths being taught. So I actually have some sympathy with this proposal of mandating a certain amount of time to be spent each day on maths as a way of really increasing the message that you do need to you need to have a quantity of maths teaching happening in the classroom. But I also think just sort of mandating a time is it's a treatment of like a symptom rather than treating the cause. I mean, if teachers are avoiding maths in their teaching, if when something comes up, maths is the subject that kind of is the first to go to make way for whatever extra thing is being asked of a teacher in the classroom, I think we really need to look at ways of supporting teachers so that they don't pick maths to kind of push off to the side and
Well,
squeeze
let's
out
look at
the.
another idea in the proposal, which is introduce an exit exam for primary and intermediate teaching graduates to demonstrate their expertise, reading, writing, maths and science instruction, and require existing teachers to undertake professional development. This is essentially assessment of the specific mathematical capabilities of the teachers when they graduate and when they're in service. Is there value in that, especially were it to then trigger extra support?
Well, at the moment, the Teachers Council has already put in place recently an entry exam requirement of literacy and numeracy skills to get into the training for teaching. So I'm not sure that an exit exam would offer all that much more. Professional development is absolutely something that's worthwhile and necessary. It's more about the knowing the pedagogies and knowing how to teach the maths necessarily than knowing the maths to a high level yourself.
Let's look at assessment and the third peg here. They're not in order of National's policy. Require standardised, robust assessment of student progress in reading, writing, and maths at least twice a year, every year from year 3 to year 8, with clear reporting to parents. From the maths perspective, how much testing does happen already and when?
There is a lot of testing that happens. I mean, there are also a lot of different tests available that schools are already using. There's some really high quality testing, types of tests that schools can choose from and use. And I think this is something that's available and utilized in schools. I mean, whenever there's kind of a policy call, we need more assessment. The first thing I would say is you can weigh a pig as much as you like, but it doesn't actually going to make the pig grow. And so all the time that you spend on assessing children is time that you're not spending teaching the children. So I think we always need to bear that in mind. We also generally know which children are needing extra in mathematics, which children are not quite meeting the grade. That's something that's it's easy for a teacher to observe. It's easy for schools to know. And so mandating an assessment twice a year with a particular named assessment tool, I don't think is going to make the sort of difference that you know it might claim to make. These sorts of announcements actually always raise red flags for me because I always want to ask, what is going to be done with that assessment data? I mean, the policy might say at the moment it's for reporting to parents, and I think it is important to report to parents how children are
Is
doing in
it
math.
required though, Lisa? And I'm wondering why this is part of the policy. Do parents often feel like they are left out of what's going on?
I think some parents do feel left out about what's going on. But when we had the, I mean, I'm speaking as a parent with my parent hat on now, when we had the national standards policy, it actually narrowed the reporting requirements down to this reading, writing, maths, and we lost a whole lot of really important information about how the children were doing that I wanted to know. I wanted to know how they were participating. I wanted to know how, the friendships that I'm making, were they contributing to class discussions? Were they enthusiastic participants in PE? Those are the things that, as a parent, I wanted to know, rather than receiving a number, or a point on a scale, as to where my child was doing. I think we need to have really good communication between schools and parents. Having a school, a nationwide assessment with numbers, and that often leading to rankings of schools and rankings of children within those schools, often it does more damage than
Yeah.
good.
Okay, that's the argument we've been around a few times. I know, and everything from decile arguments to testing and national standards as well. Look, let's the final. I want to just get a final observation from you along the lines of whether actually both parties are sort of in the same ballpark, in very different stages, obviously, of their proposals. The free online resource bank with lesson plans and materials aligned to the new curriculum, is there an argument for that? Is the ability to interpret and apply the curriculum so broad at the moment that some teachers are just overwhelmed, right? Designing lesson plans, aligning it with the curriculum. Is there an argument to offer a centralised resource bank?
It's, I mean, I find this policy really interesting because we have exactly that already. I mean, it's somewhat unimaginatively called NZ Maths. Anyone can Google NZ Maths and find it, and it is exactly what is being described. It's this online massive resource bank full of lessons, detailed lesson plans, assessment items. It's linked to the curriculum. It's exactly what National's promising, and so I'm not sure whether someone didn't do their homework, or maybe NZ Maths needs a slightly higher profile to be so that people are more aware of it. But certainly all my students that go through pre-service training know about NZ Maths and the huge amount of resources that are available to them.